Welcome to Not Enough Champagne, a podcast that sets the agenda. My name's Corey Hazelhurst and my partner in propaganda is Steve Haynes.
Hey, hey.
In this episode, we're picking our movers and shakers of 2019. So Steve, we tried this last year with reasonable success, I think. We've amended a couple of categories for this year. So if you're regular listeners, you might notice a couple of changes. We are going to pick the party leader, the cabinet minister, the shadow cabinet minister, a member from neither Labour or the Conservative Party, an activist or commentator, and a wildcard who we think will make waves in the political world of 2019. And at the end of the year, we'll see who of us was right in our picks based on completely subjective criteria. We are going to start with Steve because Steve won the toss. So Steve, which leader is going to be the most influential in 2019?
I have gone for Nicola Sturgeon.
Oh, that is interesting.
Yeah, a bit of a random pick. If we end up in a position where the Brexit withdrawal agreement is coming to vote, and it looks like it's close, then really Nicola Sturgeon's SNP might be the ones that completely derail everything. Likewise, it could easily be that if we have some form of election during the year, say, we have a people's vote of some capacity, it is going to be as a result of the SNP pushing for that activity in some way. But fundamentally, I think that the SNP and Nicola Sturgeon have a very good chance of being influential in 2019.
Interesting. I've gone for Jeremy Corbyn. More maybe in hope rather than expectation. However, for a similar reason for yourself, as leader of an opposition party, he has a massive capacity to make the political weather on Brexit in the start of the year. I also think that the economic message that he has will start cutting through regardless of whether the deal has passed or not. But I think Labour's message of wanting an end to austerity and wanting an end to the spending squeeze will resonate with voters, and I think the Tories' response to that will end up making the weather. So I think that Corbyn has an opportunity to be very influential, and I think he might just take it because the government doesn't have enough bandwidth to do anything else. It'll be Labour setting the running, I think, in a lot of areas, I think, on the home front.
I would agree with that in principle. In practice, that relies on the Labour leadership not having another summer clouded by anti-Semitism, for instance, or not having as many own goals as they had in 2018. So that was one of the reasons I didn't go for Corbyn.
I don't think that will happen, though. We'll have to see. None of us went for Sir Vince Cable or any of the iterations of Sir Vince Cable, probably because he's a little bit rubbish. And none of us went for the Prime Minister. Is that just because, well, I didn't, essentially because I feel like her days are numbered and this year is going to be more about who replaces May rather than what she can do.
I did have her down as my number two for this, just because she is the Prime Minister. It's her withdrawal agreement that's going to the House. She is still shaping things as we go along, and she's immune from challenge from her own backbenchers till later on in November this year. But fundamentally, I just don't think she's going to do anything with it, because again, bandwidth is all Brexit, and we know what's happening with Brexit. Well, we don't, but that's the issue, though.
And I don't feel like she is setting the agenda on Brexit. It feels like at the moment May is just doing the same stuff that she's done for the past 2 months. She's going to the DUP, seeing if she can get concessions, which they're not giving her. She's going to her backbenchers to see if they'll vote for the deal, which they're not. She's going to the EU to see if she can get any concessions, and she's not. It feels like she's in a game trying to get a double six, and she's just rolling dice, but she only has one dice.
Yeah.
Cabinet Minister, then. I'm still in two minds about this, even as I make the pick. I'm going to plump for Amber Rudd.
Okay, interesting.
I nearly, in the moment of madness, picked the assassin-faced baby Gavin Williamson.
you need to explain that reasoning.
The reasoning behind Williamson was this year is going to be a parade of Tory cabinet ministers trying to succeed May, and Gavin Williamson is leading the most unsubtle leadership campaign. So he will make waves somehow, even if it's just telling various foreign countries to shut up and go away. But also, it's his name that's on the agreement with the DUP. And in terms of the political and parliamentary machinations around Brexit, he was one of the ones who was telling May to try and delay the vote because there weren't the votes there. And I think he would have played a bit of a role behind the scenes trying to get support in Parliament for that vote. And I think would still... It feels the gossip and the tittle-tattle and the Westminster criminology suggests that Williamson has a better relationship with the DUP than Julian Smith, the present Chief Whip, does.
Okay, so makes sense.
That was my rationale for Williamson. On the other hand, I just can't take him seriously, so I just couldn't pick him. I almost then just went for Michael Gove, who was my pick last year, which turned out to be a pretty decent pick. Again, I think he'll be quite influential among a certain section of the Tory party and its members in terms of his views on Brexit. And also, he's the only cabinet minister that actually did anything last year and had an agenda outside of Brexit. But my choice for Rudd is, one, she's at Work and Pensions. The government really needs to sort out work and pensions and universal credit. That will be a massive issue this year, regardless of whether or not the government get a handle on it. And so Rudd, I think, will be in the news for that. Also, I think she is a leadership contender and will be wanting to try and get her name out as a potential prime minister. So I can see her trying to make a few waves. And I think the other thing is, Amber Rudd has also been one of those cabinet ministers who's been trying to come out in public with a plan B for May if her deal fails. And that is more pivoting to a softer Brexit, to a Norway option Brexit. And I think she could be quite an influential player behind the scenes. Probably more so than Gove, because I think Gove is essentially, his influence is with those Tory backbenchers who essentially are not going to compromise. Whereas Rudd's got the ability maybe to reach out to different parts of the House and try and get a compromise. So that's my thought behind Rudd.
Interesting. I have gone with Sajid Javid.
The Sajid.
This is a man who's clearly on manoeuvres. This is a man who's within days of the new year has already made headlines by declaring a crisis and a major event of 12...
Of breaking international law. That's quite impressive.
12 people kind of like in some boats heading towards England. He's the Home Secretary. In terms of setting agendas, in terms of being able to insert himself into debates and make news headlines in a way that's going to be interesting from the perspective of like the Tory leadership contest and being able to pander to the Tory grassroots, Javid's in a very strong position to do that as Home Secretary. Fundamentally, he's the person that's responsible for immigration. He's not prepared, he's not too ashamed to pull that trigger and use it to his advantage. I think we're going to be seeing an awful lot of him in the next year.
I think we are, but I also think we've reached peak Javid. He's the bookie's favourite for the Tory leadership. That's not a good place to be. We've kind of hinted before about how the Tory party generally don't pick favourites. Also, there's been a lot of briefings against him, both from Number 10 and other cabinet ministers over the past month. So we got leaked a lot of details of his £840 a night safari holiday, whatever it was he had to cancel over Christmas. We've also had anonymous briefings go out saying that he refers to himself as the Sajid and talks about himself in the third person at meetings. And the fact those briefings are out there means that, yes, he's out on manoeuvres, but he's out in the same way that Gavin Williamson was out on manoeuvres. It's not very subtle. And people are reacting against that, which means I think his star will not be shining as highly in December as it is now.
I would agree with that completely, but then I'm not choosing a pick for to be the next Conservative Party leader. I'm choosing the most influential cabinet minister for 2019. And I think on that front, Javid is, even if he loses some of his shine, he's still going to be very strong up the front half of the year.
So you're predicting a year of hang him and flog him rhetoric in 2019?
Or the equivalent of that in some capacity, yeah. I suspect it will be more focused on immigration, but...
Oh, marvellous. Well, this year's just getting better and better, isn't it?
I know.
Let's brighten things up here and talk about our shadow cabinet pick. Steve, who is your nomination for the mover and shaker in a shadow cabinet this year?
My nomination for mover and shaker in the shadow cabinet is one John McDonnell. a safe pick. John McDonnell is obviously Shadow Chancellor, obviously very close to Jeremy Corbyn. He's the person who's helping craft the policy agenda that Labour is going to have moving forward. You're seeing more and more policies coming out which are more in line with that more left-wing policy that McDonnell and Corbyn are a part of than the more traditional centre-left elements. But also, when it comes to the big issues, which is Brexit, a people's vote, is there going to be another general election, all of that sort of stuff, you might see is John McDonnell's influence becoming more and more obvious. If Labour comes out in favour of a people's vote at some point, McDonnell's going to be having a major role in that. The language he's been using in the past on the people's vote and a second referendum is a lot more positive, for lack of a better term, than the one that Corbyn and his office have been utilising. As such, I think he's a relatively safe pick on all accounts.
Yeah, he was my first pick, you bastard. Almost exclusively because he has been warmer and warmer to the concept of a people's vote over the last couple of months. And I think if Corbyn does come out in favour and swings the Labour machine behind supporting another referendum, it's probably because of McDonnell's influence, because I think McDonnell's got more than half an eye on winning that future election. I think McDonnell understands that to win that election, Labour needs to be more unambiguously pro-Remain. My pick then is Sir Keir Starmer, or as we should start calling him, Steer Karma, as one of our activists did in a malapropism. I'm going for Steer Karma because it's really hard to look beyond March the 29th at the moment. And although I think that McDonnell is the key person probably behind the positioning of Labour, I think it's probably Starmer that he's going to be the voice behind that message, and he's going to be a key formation in Labour's Brexit position too. But also, and it was, I think, just on the New Statesman the day we're recording this, is a poll of Labour members suggests that he is the front runner in the Labour leadership. In terms of a poll of Labour members said that Starmer was their first pick for leader. I wouldn't bet my house or even the notebook I'm holding at the moment on him becoming Labour leader. But it would be interesting to see if that bubble does keep growing rather than bursting, I think.
See, I think Starmer's quite a good choice. He was my number two. I do think, actually, there's another element to his ability to be an influencer in 2019, is that once we get past Brexit Day, you know, there's still going to be lots of things to do as shadow of the Brexit department.
Obviously. Only for the next 15 years.
But what you might actually find is because Starmer's been much more closely aligned in terms of the Brexit policy with McDonnell, is that Starmer himself takes a more of a role in wider policy and wider discussions. Starmer's eye for detail is something that could be very beneficial in a number of other areas.
Well, I suppose as a former head of the CPS, certainly on things like Home Affairs, I can see him probably being quite useful. Right, my first pick, isn't it? And we're looking for a politician not in the Labour or the Tory party. I've gone for Arlene Foster because she's the head of the DUP, and it's the DUP that are running this country, Steve, not the Conservatives.
Yeah, the same reason I went for Arlene last year. It's still a good pick. If we do get a vote of no confidence in the government, they decide to end it all, it's ending. There's very little that the Conservatives can do about it.
Well, they could give them a few billion quid, maybe.
But if they decide they don't care about that. So, good pick. But I did not go for Arlene, not either of my two options.
Ooh, controversial.
So I've gone with Caroline Lucas. I am not necessarily convinced that we are going to get, still convinced we're necessarily going to get a people's vote. I'm not necessarily convinced that even if we do, it goes the way that the Remainers and the people's vote want. I'm not even convinced they'll even get the question they want on the ballot, with Remain being an option. Regardless of all of that, Caroline Lucas is a very well-known figure. She's a very effective communicator, a very effective politician. She is going to be vital, I feel, for the Greens in this year, even though she's not leader anymore, because if Labour does support Brexit in some capacity and doesn't attempt really to stop it, there's a whole swathe of left-wing voters who are pro-European for the Greens to kind of sweep up. If there's anyone that can undermine Jeremy Corbyn's grasp on the left at the moment, I think it's her. Provided that Labour doesn't actually try and stop Brexit.
I think it's a really interesting pick. And I do think there will be a party split of some form this year or some form of realignment this year.
It's just who splits.
And I mean, I don't even necessarily mean that a party cleaves in two. It could even be something like 10 Tory MPs go and leave the whip and join somewhere else, or 10 Labour MPs go off and leave the whip. But I think something happens. And I think the Greens are probably best placed to exploit any split on the left side, because the Lib Dems, for reasons we've chatted about in other podcasts, I don't think are best placed to get any...
leftward.
Yeah, movement. I don't think they're the best place to capitalise on that, whereas I think the Greens really could.
Yeah.
But I think you're right. It's only if, in the very, very unlikely scenario that Theresa May actually brings back a Brexit deal that Jeremy Corbyn says he can support, which has a full customs union in it, which I don't think will happen. The alternative is that maybe Labour somehow abstains on a Brexit deal.
Yeah, and fundamentally how that gets viewed and how that gets played up by various parts of the media, and gets viewed by the Labour membership and Labour supporters. I mean, what I would say, just as a kind of my honourable mention, just because you brought them up, was my honourable mention was actually Vince Cable. As a party, they still could have influence in the votes moving forward. They could be, like, if you do have a vote of no confidence in the government, the UP abstains, how they vote, do they want to risk another election, do they not? Lib Dems could be a player. It's just the situations I can see that happening are quite slim. Yeah. Which is why I didn't go with Vince, but to completely ignore them is probably not quite right.
No. Hello, Mark, by the way. I don't think that Labour will enable Brexit in some way. I don't think so. I can understand your Caroline Lucas pick. I'm just hoping you're wrong. Influential backbencher, then. Who have you gone for?
I've gone for Dominic Grieve.
Bastard. You've done it again, haven't you?
Yep. Fundamentally, the reason I've gone with Dominic Grieve is because he heads up that little group of moderate Tories who have rebelled in the past, and if for whatever reason they don't vote for the withdrawal agreement, then government's screwed. It's not getting through. But their actions could matter if it comes back in a second or a third or a fourth or however many times it takes to come back. And eventually, I would imagine that they could be the reason that that vote goes through in one way or another. And as such, I think Grieve as kind of the de facto ringleader is probably a good shout for this.
Yeah, he was my pick precisely for that reason, that it's Grieve who can put forward amendments which can carry cross-party support and get a majority of MPs in a way that literally nothing else can, apart from the government earning contempt in the House of Commons. He's a good pick. In that case, I'm going to go with my second pick, which is Yvette Cooper. Now, it could well be that I'm picking the person who did very well last year, buying shares in Yvette Cooper when her stock is too high. Yvette Cooper, I think at Politico's end of year awards, she got the award for most influential backbencher because as chair of the Home Affairs Select Committee, it's her questioning which led to the resignation of Amber Rudd, one cabinet minister, and the immigration minister Caroline Noakes was kind of left in the soup as well as a few of her questions from Cooper. So now that we actually have a government immigration policy, it will be interesting to see Noakes again go forward the Home Affairs Select Committee, and I would be surprised if Noakes lasts the year as Immigration Minister, and a lot of that will be due to Yvette Cooper.
Cooper's a strong pick. Yeah, there is always a bit of a risk for choosing somebody who did well last year and hoping that they will continue that, but Cooper's a good good politician. She's a good political performer in pretty much most circumstances, given the circumstances that are going to be coming up in this year. She's going to have a lot to do, and therefore there's lots of chances for her to influence the agenda.
Activist and commentator. I've got two names on my list who I have to say are probably both quite wild cards, if I'm honest. I'm going to plump for Paul Goodman,
okay,
who's the editor of Conservative Home. And I think, again, as we've said, a big bit of this year will be the competition to see who succeeds Theresa May. And part of that, as you've already said with Sajid Javid, is who's going to pander to Tory members the most? And we've already seen I think we spoke about on last week's podcast about the attitude of Tory members to a no-deal Brexit, who are then massively more in favour of a no-deal Brexit than the rest of the country is. Paul Goodman, as a influential writer, I think, among Conservative members as to the direction of the party, as someone who regularly polls members on the performance of cabinet ministers and Conservative leaders and how well they're doing, I think has a key platform to influence Tory members and therefore, by extension, Tory MPs and cabinet ministers.
That's an interesting pick. I get where you're coming from with it. Certainly when you move into the areas of Tory leadership elections, which is basically where we are, what happens and goes on Conservative Home is very important to do. And as such, Goodman is a very good shout, especially if you kind of treat Goodman as almost like a placeholder for Conservative Home as a whole.
Mm.
My pick, kind of a group in of itself, but can be kind of personified in a single individual. That's Aaron Bastani.
Get out.
No.
Leave the bunker.
Now, I am choosing Aaron Bastani, and specifically as a kind of representative of Navarra Media, as my influential activists and commentators. Whilst Bastani, in particular, has some interesting views and some interesting attitudes in a number of areas, he and his platform have a massive following. As such, there is a lot of opportunity for them to be influential and for him to actually be influential. And a lot of this kind of choice is based on the fact that I know he's got a book coming out and the degree of whether or not that book is worth anything. Because it is supposed to be a book that's looking at kind of like the future of, I still hate this phrase, fully automated luxury communism. And if it's actually been done properly and it's an actual serious tract which looks at how we can go from where we are to the sort of vision that Bastani and a lot of the New Left have for where Britain and the world should be, then it could be very influential. Bastani is a bit of a wild card, as is Navarra Media, but I do think that they are very important in terms of the direction of the left in Britain at the moment. Especially as they are, he and the likes of Ash Sarkar, who's another Navarra Media, are part of the vanguard for Corbyn when it comes to media. A bit out there.
I suppose a similar logic to your pick of Owen Jones last year, who again is a commentator who was very much about articulating the Corbynite point of view. I can see why you've gone for Navarra Media and for Bastani in particular. I'm not convinced that they are necessarily influential in terms of changing minds. They're quite good at explaining the party line and maybe reflecting a different point of view. I don't know if they necessarily will change a lot of minds and make a lot of waves, if I'm honest. But my second pick, which again was a little bit out there, was Paul Mason, for a fairly similar reason, in that, again, he's...
You really like your pulls, don't you?
It's all about the pulls, yeah. But again, Paul Mason's one of those outspoken, more mainstream media commentators on Jeremy Corbyn since he was elected. But over the last month or two has been a bit more outspoken in terms of saying that Labour needs to be more pro-Remain. And I thought that he might be an influential figure almost inside the tent. And I feel like someone like Paul Mason is able to push for his own agenda inside the Corbyn tent in a way I just don't think Bastani is capable of doing. But could be wrong. Final wildcard then. It's a bit Labour-centric, I think, my picks, but maybe that's understandable given everything. But my wildcard is Len McCluskey, head of Unite. Again, if we assume that at least it's really hard to look behind March the 29th, I think, and then we'll just see where the dust falls and what the hell's going on. But in terms of the manoeuvres over Brexit, where Labour goes over Brexit is going to be crucial. Len McCluskey's been one of those high-profile Labour figures who doesn't want a people's vote. His word on that, I think, will be crucial.
That makes sense. I can totally see where you're coming from. Mine's a very, very, very wild card.
You've not gone for Nick Timothy, have you?
I've not gone for Nick Timothy.
Have you gone for Vladimir Putin?
Not too far off. I have gone for a foreign leader, though. I've gone for Emmanuel Macron.
That is wild.
Yeah. My thinking behind this is, as we move into the post withdrawal agreement situation, with a withdrawal agreement or a hard Brexit or whatever, Macron is going to play a pivotal role in British politics, and his decisions about how he works with us are going to be the difference between us having, in no deal, us having stocked shelves or not in supermarkets. It's going to be the difference between how much of a immigration crisis, quote unquote, do we have, because he is a politician that is massively unpopular and desperate to kind of boost up his ratings. He could easily take some, try and make a hardball play against Britain, try and force the Calais camps on our side, or change how he wants to operate those. So in exchange for cooperation in other areas, so that we have to pick up more of that slack. Or if we end up in a situation where we are trying to, you know, get an extension on Article 50, Macron, again, due to his position, could be the sort of person who turns around and says no. And he's not in a particularly healthy position, but due to the proximity to the UK, I think Macron could be very influential on our domestic scene, even if not overtly.
I think it's a bad pick. I think...
I did say it was a very, very wild card.
But following your logic, I can see your logic. However, if I was going to pick an EU leader then, I would either pick Merkel as a more powerful figure who doesn't have approval ratings of minus 84. Well, not on the European scene. Merkel's still, I think, more important foreign leader than Macron is on the European scene. Or I pick Leo Varadkar, because his position over Ireland and the Irish border, I think a lot of the EU leaders will be in solidarity with him. And I think that is...
I think for the broader points around general Brexit, the withdrawal agreement, can we negotiate this? What's that future relationship as a whole look like? Absolutely. Leo Varadkar would be a very, very good shout. But fundamentally, for the vast majority of people in Britain, and not the UK, Britain, an awful lot of our goods, our traffic, the things that influence people's daily lives are coming through the French ports and things like that. You know, the connections between the UK and France are major infrastructures. Macron's a bigger shout because his policies and his response to things has the ability to influence a lot more people's daily lives than Varadkar's does.
Quite possibly, but then I think any shift in the deal will depend on the attitude to the backstop, and that is the Irish border. And so I think that Varadkar's maybe a bigger shout. Or if even Michel Barnier, potentially.
It'd be interesting. Yeah, Barnier's position is going to be interesting, though, because he's the head negotiator. Mm. We don't know at this moment in time what we do know what we'll be negotiating. Obviously, it'll be the long-term relationship with the EU. But we still don't even have a clue what the Britain wants that to be. So I don't necessarily think at this... And no. I don't think that's going to be any clearer by the end of the year.
No, but May will go to Macron and he'll say, go to Barnier, because he's the negotiator. And that's generally what's been happening before. I can see your point, because essentially Macron's got tanking poll ratings in France. I can see him trying to make more of an effort on the international stage. I think it's hard for him to reform Europe because he's not got the... Because he's domestically weak, it's hard for him to make a clout on the European stage to reform Europe like he wanted to do. He has tried to make a bit of a play by talking about the need to confront populism in what was an obvious kind of overt attack on Donald Trump. Given that he can't really achieve stuff on a European level, on a domestic level, maybe just trying to make a few waves over Brexit on a kind of semi in macro international level.
Yeah. That's like the wild card picks.
Yeah, I suppose judging Le McCluskey or Emmanuel Macron is going to be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I almost my other wild card pick was Rob Mueller.
For God's sake, right, we're ending this episode now. So we have an episode coming out next week, and I might even try and write something, listeners. You never know. If I do, you'll find it on the website, notenoughchampagne.com. We also have a Twitter page, which is @nochampagnepod, and a Facebook page is facebook.com/notenoughchampagne. James Cram designed our logo. You can follow him on Twitter @JamesCram. And Dave Depper is responsible for our theme tune, Plucky Good Times. My Twitter handle is @paperbackwriter.
Mine is @acousticradical.
Happy plotting, everyone. Especially you, the Sag.